Okay, the names of God. So this is series number two, Jehovah Jireh, which means the God who provides. And Ruth just read that text that we're going to be mostly out of today. But I'm going to give you some background, just some context of Abraham. If you're not familiar with Abraham, if you've been in church for a while, you do know. But just a context for this particular passage and what's going to happen, I think it'll be helpful. So at this point, Abraham has claimed his hope and displayed his trust in God before, right? But in a time of panic and unbelief, instead of trusting God to fulfill his promise of having Isaac, the promised seed, who would be the lineage of Christ, Abraham, in his unbelief, is persuaded by his wife's unbelief and decides to have a baby with their servant Hagar. This creates a lot of confusion and problems in their life, all stemming from his distrust in God to provide what he promised. Now, I'm going to read this for you, and I'll tell you, if you think soap operas are full of drama, I think you should just read your Bible, and you hear this story right here, and it'll put some context for you, just how crazy things are right now. It says, "Now Sarah, Abram's wife, bore him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar, and Sarai said to Abram, 'Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant, have sex with her. It may be that I shall obtain children by her.' And Abraham listened to the voice of Sarah." I bet he did. "So after Abraham had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarah, Abraham's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. He went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, 'May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me.'" Now she's blaming Abram for her deciding this whole plan. And he, of course, he's responsible and wrong as well. "But Abram said to Sarai, 'Behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please.' Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her." Now look at the drama in that. She tells him, "Look, I want a baby. Even though we're not going to wait on the Lord, I want a baby. Go sleep with my servant so we can make this baby, do our own thing, and make God's plan come to pass." Now, many of us have struggled before with waiting on God and doing our own thing and wanting something to come to pass, knowing that we didn't wait on God and doing it. So Abraham struggled to believe God would provide. So Abraham did his own thing. See, the thing here is we don't need any help to struggle with our unbelief, right? We need encouragement. We constantly need encouragement. And this is what we want church to be for you, that it helps fight against unbelief, that it promotes a walk of faith, like the music, the fellowship. Music and fellowship creates an atmosphere that helps you see that God is able. He is good. We sing about his goodness. You see the fellowship where different people from different backgrounds, ages and all that, what heaven's going to look like, give you a perspective of God. But then the preaching as well gives you a perspective outside of what you might think yourself. So church provides perspective for God and his promises to provide whatever it is that you need. Growth should be encouraged daily that God is faithful. So you take Sunday and going into Monday, Tuesday, getting involved in a community group or whatever, so you can keep being encouraged to have this perspective that God will provide for you. Because the word, his spirit, prayer, trusting in his character helps us understand and trust his promises over our own thing. So here's an example of that. Jesus said, "If you don't forgive, God won't forgive you." Now that's a promise, right? That's a promise. So if we heed to that, we'll have peace with God and other people. But we have to believe. We have to believe in that promise, right? Mark 9:23 says this, as a man was dealing with his possessed son, Jesus said to him, "If you can, all things are possible for one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe, help my unbelief." That's all of us, all right? I believe, but I'm struggling at this time to believe fully in what you can provide for me in this situation. So we as a church, we each other, we're here to help your unbelief, complete your joy through a growing faith and trust in God. That's what a faith community does. Faith community does that. And it's very important, because doubt becomes stronger in isolation. It becomes stronger in isolation. So that encouragement we need. This is our goal as a church and body as believers. Proverbs 11:14 says this. I want you to see how dangerous isolation can be. It says, where there is no guidance, a people falls, but in an abundance of counselors, there is safety. This is why isolation is dangerous, because when you don't surround yourself with like-minded people who build you up in faith to believe God what he can provide, you end up trusting yourself. Right? You end up trusting yourself. And that goes against our culture and what we hear in television. Believe in yourself. Trust in yourself. You can do it. And I'm going to qualify while I'm against that as we continue to go. Abraham and his wife needed someone to remind them of God's promise to them to deter their unbelief from trusting in themselves. They knew what God told them to do, but they isolated themselves from God and his word, and they believed on what they wanted to do, right? So by the time Abraham gets to this place where he sees God as his provider, his lack of faith in God's promises to trust in himself and others has caused him more problems than anything else. Have you noticed that in your life before? My lack of faith in what God's promise is has caused me more problems. So it is through, but here's the beauty of God. It is through his failure to trust God in the past and those consequences of those where he learns to trust God throughout his life and to the ultimate degree. It is through his failure to trust God in the past and the consequences of them where he learns to trust God throughout his life. Because think about what happened. He ended up trusting in his own unbelief, his own way, his wife and all that. And he went and did something else. He had a baby mama, a strange baby that he didn't even take care of. But he loved them and cared for them. But it didn't have to go that way had he trusted in God's way. Now we know God works all things for good and he ends up doing that. But that came out of unbelief, right? So what is our response to God as provider? Genesis 22, 1 through 3. Then we're going to get in right into the passages of this whole thing about God being a provider. So it takes a while. After a while, Abraham ends up having this situation with Hagar and the servant. And it says, after these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abram, Abraham. And he said, here am I. He said, take your son, your only son Isaac, who they now have, that promised seed that they trusted God for, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place in which God had told him. Now, they finally have this, time has passed, and they finally have their promised seed, Isaac. Right? Now God tells him to go sacrifice him. This is a son he's been waiting all his life for. He didn't have him until he's 100 years old. Now imagine this now. But he has seen how he has trusted himself before and has failed, so he doesn't procrastinate when God calls him to do something. So the best realization we can have is a poor spirit. This is where I'm going to qualify this. Matthew 5:3 says this. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So a poor in spirit says, I don't have what it takes. I don't have enough. I need God. That's what Jesus is saying. The poor in spirit know they need God. So the goal is not for me to prove I can do it without God, like we talked about the cultural message, or I trust in myself, but to say I live for the kingdom so I am teachable. God can tell me something, and I don't fight him and say, no, I got a better idea. So I need direction. That's one provision I think I've been blessed with more than materials or anything else. Wisdom to know what I need to do, right? The direction I need to go in my life. So my question to you, can God tell you anything different than what you know? Right? Because Abraham... to be asked to sacrifice your child, this is new, right? But Abraham realized this. His biggest problem was that before, he struggled with an arrogant spirit, living for himself and trusting for himself. He said, really, I don't need God for this or wait on his promises. I will trust my own way. So he's learning, like, look, I messed up before. God is telling me to do something different. That's what verse 3 is talking about. I need to listen. Verse 3 says this. I'll read it real quick. So Abraham arose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him. Notice this. He rose early in the morning, so he's not procrastinating. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering. So he's not playing. Abraham could have argued with God. Right? That's what procrastination is. Arguing of taking care of something. But he's so humbled by the past consequences of trusting himself that he doesn't hesitate when told. Now, this is the thing with my son. He's 9. And if you had a 9-year-old, especially a boy, and I think just my genes, he rebuttals everything. Right? Everything has a different way, possibly, we could do this. Which can be good. I tell him all the time. That's great. You're thinking. You got your creative ideas and all that. But the thing he doesn't realize at 9 is that he trusts himself over me and his mother. And the thing is this, I'm trying to tell him, like, look, we can actually leave for 3 days, leave you alone, and you live by yourself if you got a better way of handling business, right? Because I want him to know that your ideas are untested in life. They're untested. So instead of having a poor spirit where I'm teachable, I'm listening, he has an arrogant spirit because just because he can think about it doesn't mean he can do it, right? And that's what the Bible says. 1 Corinthians 8:2 says, if anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. What is it saying there? It's saying, you may know some things, but you don't know what's next. So once your philosophy and ideas of life cause you trouble, you tend to distrust yourself. Right? You tend to distrust yourself, and you can end up, if you don't have God, you can end up living in morbid depression and low, terribly low self-esteem that you're nothing. That's the danger of believing the philosophy of the world, that you don't need God, trust yourself. Well, how does that work for everybody, right? So when you see your ideas begin to fail, you get humble enough to understand, okay, I need to listen. So even though it sounded crazy to sacrifice his child, he trusts God in his lack of understanding. He doesn't trust himself. That's so key when you see you make bad decisions and you have to bear the brunt of those consequences. You end up hesitating, jumping into life. Youth is beautiful, especially, college age. You get all that knowledge and all that, and you've been taken care of and all that. But the real challenge is when you get out in life and actually have to get the job, pay the bills. Then you start thanking your parents by that time. Like, you start being grateful because you realize how hard life is because now your methods are being tested. But he doesn't trust himself, Abraham. Proverbs 16:25, there is a way that seems right to a man, but his end is the way to death. It seems right because I've done this before or I know how to do this. But it ends in death because you need God to teach you new things and go new directions that you never thought before. But distrusting yourself must be replaced by trusting God. It has to be. But not other people for provision. Distrust yourself, that doesn't mean you jump into trusting other people either for provision. Because remember, Abraham's wife is the one who told him to sleep with the servant to bring about God's promise. The sad part is Abraham didn't argue too much, right? He probably didn't think about the consequences of doing that. He was like, whoa, this is strange. It's a different kind of wife. But it got him in a whole lot of trouble. So this time, instead of trusting his wife, he recalls his relationship with God and his faithfulness. That's what we should do. It's not a knock against people and that we love and love us. But at the same time, are you better than God? That's the arrogance of it. Do you really think you know better than God? And Abraham knew, I trusted you last time. It didn't work well. I need to trust God. We need to trust God. Because he's reminding him that God has been better to him than other people have been. Would you agree with that? God has been better than you to you than other people have been. And he has been to himself, right? God's been better to him than he's been to himself. He's truly poor in spirit. So he's not seeking people to progress him in his life. He's not seeking somebody who I can hook up with and they'll make a better life for me. He has moved beyond people being his help because people are limited. That's what I'm saying. I'm not knocking that you don't have a great spouse or a great parent or whatever, but you're not God, right? If we really believe in God, you cannot give me everything. And what kind of weight is on the person who you're looking at to give you everything? That's unbearable. So one thing I'm realizing right now, my girls, you know, until they come into faith, my girls need constant affirmation. My son does too, but, you know, boys are more prideful about it. They'll just do it and sneak and look at you like, are you watching me? But my girls will come downstairs after getting dressed by mommy and doing their hair, and I take my seven-year-old out on dates and whatnot, and they'll come down and sashay and spin around and like, daddy, you know, and be overt about it. And I was like, you look gorgeous. I make a big deal out of it. You look gorgeous, honey. I can't wait to take you out and all that. They need the constant affirmation. Constant affirmation. And I just hit my son. I was like, tell your sister she looks good. He's like, you look good. She should feel like that, right? Because until they get faith, they're looking at me as the Christ figure. Daddy needs to constantly affirm. But if you're grown and you should have your own faith, how can someone keep up with that? Well, you constantly got to tell your husband, you look great, honey. You look great, honey. Every day, you look great. You look great. You look great. After a while, you want to pull like your lip over your face, because by this time, you become like a holy bucket where I pour water in and it never retains. Why? Because God has to be there. God has to be there. Right? True wisdom teaches to not trust your own spirit over or others over God. Such people see themselves in need of God, right? I'm not against affirmation and all that. Of course not. But they can't be your God. Abraham knew that. My wife can't be my God. She don't know what to do. I trust her in some things if it lines up with God. But in this, God is telling me to do this. I need to trust him. Abraham is now on his way with full conviction to do God's will. He's confirming his worship, what we need to do. Genesis 22, 4 and 8. Let's keep going. It says, on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went, both of them, together. And Isaac said to his father, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. He said, behold, the fire and the wood. But where's the lamb for a burnt offering? He's getting it. Verse 8, Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them, together. Now, notice this in verse 5. Even when he asked him to do it, Abraham didn't see the request from God as ridiculous or crazy. Right? He tells him to go sacrifice his son, and he doesn't look at it like, what do you mean sacrifice his son? That's crazy. He sees it as an opportunity to worship. Notice, he says, the boy and I will go over there and worship and come back again. See, he sees an opportunity to worship. He doesn't fuss like sometimes we do when God tells us to do something. You know why? Because he knows how good God has been to him. See, when you start thinking about the mercy of God over bad decisions we made, when God asks you to do something else, you start to think, he's been good to me. And we all been there. So Abraham, in this worship opportunity, wants to prove his love because he is grateful. He's grateful. How do you see a request or a command from God? That's what I want to ask you today. How do you see a request or command from God? Have you forgotten how good God has been to you? The Bible says the goodness or kindness, moral excellence of God leads to repentance, changing the way you live, changing the way you think, because God has been so good to me. This is why disobedience from children hurts or angers us as adults, right? This is why it hurts us, because we ask them, why won't you obey my request? You know what we're saying? In other words, why won't you reciprocate love back to me? We're not saying, when we're angry, we're not saying, I'm just mad. No, we're hurt. You know why we're doing that? Because look how good I've been to you. If you're a good parent, you say, look how good I've been to you. And you're going to fuss with me because I asked you to clean up your room? Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what angers you as a parent. Because you're thinking about, I'm just serving, I'm loving you. I'm not doing this as a ledger. I did all this, so now you got to do this. I'm doing this freely because I love you. So if you're going to fuss with me about unloading the dishwasher, Danya, let me dismantle your Barbie house. Because you don't have to have it. So that's what God is doing to us. He's saying here, God asks us, what is wrong with our relationship that you won't do what I asked you to do? Haven't I been good to you? That's what God's saying to us. So when God gives us a command, it is an opportunity to reciprocate love. And we fail all the time, right? And just when we see that, the mercy and kindness and love of God to keep pursuing us. Isn't that amazing? It's not like people where you constantly do the same thing and you mess up all the time. And I know for me and my wife, like, you just seem like you're not changing. You keep doing the same thing. I'm sorry, honey. I'm sorry. She has to keep forgiving. But people get tired of that. They just start, after a while, you're just like, oh, my God. But God's not like that, right? So why don't you see this as a request or an opportunity to worship or sacrifice to me? This is what God is saying. And this is the key. Why won't you see that blessing I gave you as an opportunity to sacrifice, seeing that I gave it to you anyway? You know why? Because you don't have to have that child. I gave it to you, right? Abraham understood this. That's why he was able to give it right back. He didn't fuss at all. He realized a scoff at God's request is to forget his own life and who Isaac belonged to. So when God asks for something from us and we say, nah, we forgot whose it belongs to. That's why I tell my kids, look, you don't own anything in my house. Me and your wife's, my wife's house, you don't own anything. And they fuss, no, mommy said I can get this and grandma said this is mine. No, it's mine. I am lending it to you. You are a steward over what I give you. Because you know why? Who does that? God. And so I'm teaching them, you cannot sit here and look at me and say, I earned this. I deserve this, right? Because that's entitlement. I deserve. And you didn't even work for it. You paid no bills. Don't do anything. And you're not supposed to. You're a kid, right? But you're still supposed to teach them gratitude. Otherwise, you'll think it's yours, and it doesn't belong to you. It doesn't belong to you. You don't have to have your room. We can convert it into a gym. What I tell my son. Because I want him to understand, look, you don't have to have it. And I might be a little hard about this because I know what it's like not to have much. And I watch, when you watch people suffer for you, you will be grateful. I watch my mom suffer for me and my brother. That doesn't mean I was the greatest kid, but I didn't ask for much at all. Because when you watch people suffer and scrape for stuff, it makes you more grateful. You know how hard it took to get it, right? And that doesn't mean if you're not suffering and all that and you're struggling to pay bills, that you can't teach your kids how to appreciate and be grateful. It doesn't mean you don't freely just give them everything without teaching them, look, it's going to take some work. Go cut the grass. Go pull some weeds. So in order to worship, you must believe that God is your provider. And that's what Abraham did. God tested Abraham's worship by wanting to prove who is the provider of your life. Listen to this. He's asking him, is the child the substance of your life or am I? Prove to me that this is not what you serve me for. Go kill him. Isn't that something? Prove to me you didn't serve me for blessings. Give it away. Right? Remember, Abraham and Sarah waited 100 years to have a child, and God says, go kill him as a sacrifice. James 2:17 says this, so also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. If it's not shown that you actually love me, that's dead. This is why obedience affirms our worship. It answers that God is my provider. Because think about this. What if Abraham gets the child and now is disobedient to the command to sacrifice him? What if he's just like, you know, I got the child now. I don't need you, God. I'm going to do what I want with him. And what are you saying at that point? What is he saying? I have been serving God in order to get this blessing. So I go from being a poor spirit in need of something to being arrogant in spirit. I deserve this. Oh, I waited 100 years, God. I deserve this. Because now I have what I always desired, so forget obedience and sacrifice. So God is my provider until he asks me to sacrifice something. That's not true worship. The moment he asks me to give something and I don't give it, that's not worship. Because this is what Matthew 7 is getting at. When it talks about people in church and religious and all that kind of stuff, and then they don't do the will of the Father. Listen to this, 7:21 to 23. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does works. The will of my Father who is in heaven. The will of my Father. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, and do many mighty works in your name? And then will I declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. They're doing all these things in God's name. And God says, you're not doing what I called you to do. Which means you got to sacrifice whatever I'm telling you to do. I don't know what it is God's calling you to do. But I'm saying, if he's telling you to do it, he's saying, if you're not doing it, you're doing lawlessness, which means to do your own thing. Now, it is not worship when you replace what God told you to do, which is his will, with what you think is a better idea. Whatever we think is a better idea, God says, that's lawlessness because you're doing whatever you want. Like there's no law, there's no order of your life that I'm calling you to do. Now imagine your house without lawlessness. This is what I want you to see. Imagine your house, everybody in there does whatever they want. Right? It's chaos and it drives you crazy, not because you just sit there reveling in anger, because you love them and you want peace. You want order. You want joy. You want unity. That's what God is after. He's not just like, oh, look at them kids down there sinning and all that. He's like, no, I want to enjoy you. No one enjoys anything when it's chaos. I know in my house I don't. I'm not just smiling while everybody's running around. Everybody's trying to ask me a question. That's miserable. Like, look, one at a time. Someone asked me again. I'm going to turn the car around. You know, I'll cancel everything. I'll go overboard about certain stuff because I can't stand chaos, right? Because it's messing up the love we could be sharing in the unity. So imagine your house like that. The reason why God says obey the commands is because he wants unity to joy. He wants us to do what's right, right? So what is it that he did with Abraham? It was the threat of discipline that teaches them to obey commands, right? When your house is out of order, the threat of discipline. Whether that's spanking, whether that's taking away stuff, whatever it is, you got to get order back in that house, right? And the reason why you want order is I want you to do what's right. That's love. That's why discipline is love. I want you to do what's right for your own benefit. So discipline teaches us to do what God says. I submit to him. That's why Abraham was so quick to do what God called him to do. He had been disciplined before. Discipline taught Abraham that God was his provider. And you learn discipline a lot of times by failing. Right? Getting in trouble. And that's how Abraham was at that point in his life. Worship submits even when you don't totally understand. You just trust, right? If we got to understand everything, and that's probably part of my, when I talk about my son and he needing to understand everything, we get that from our fallen nature, wanting to be like God and all that. And I get that same issue at times. I want to understand, God, what are you doing? And God just said, just trust me. Just trust me. Though Abraham would have been fearful, think about that. Fear is to face your fears and do it anyway. That's the courage part. So he knew two important things, though, even though he may have been fearful. He personally trusted the character of God by faith. He personally trusted the character of God by faith. Regardless of what other people thought, he trusted God. Because only you know how good God has been to you. Right? Now, I want you to imagine, though, he's taking the baby of the family, his wife's only son that she waited for years for, to go sacrifice him. And it's not in the Bible, but I believe it's implied. I think she understood, too, that I made decisions and didn't trust God. I'm going to sit back and worship God, too. So I'm not going to fuss at him for taking my son to go sacrifice. I don't see it in here. I don't think of it. He went out sneaking and hiding like, oh, God, she'll kill me if I end up going to go worship and sacrifice. She probably was settled like, look, we need to worship and trust God here. Go do it, honey. Go do it. He's God's. So he recalled but think about this. It's not to trust other people. He knew that. He recalled when he did trust her and not God. That's what you got to do. Well, if you trusted people before and you got in more trouble, it makes you go, okay, let's seek God on this. Can we seek God on this? The second thing he understood is he didn't trust himself and what he thought. That's huge. That's huge. He remained poor in spirit. He remembered his own foolishness. That's why I fight against that mentality of the world, because they want you to erase any bad thoughts you have about yourself. You got to get it out. And I believe you shouldn't beat up yourself and say you're nothing and all that. But you should remember that you're sinful, right? You should remember you've made foolish decisions. Why? So you don't trust yourself when God tells you to do something and say, oh, no, I know better than God. See, that's why I say discipline teaches you to be like, okay, I messed up before. Let me not do that. Verse 8, look at what verse 8 said. Abraham says, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. He answered him, not boasting in himself and what he thought. He just said, you know, God's going to do it in himself. I don't know, but I'm trusting God here. 2 Timothy says this. This is what he understood. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. God has to be faithful to his promises to provide for you, because that's who he is. That's why he says, like I said before, it's not about the inability of other people, in some way, in much of the case it is, or yourself so much, but he can do it. That's what he's saying. I'm always faithful. Always faithful. So I'm closing with this, the real provider, Genesis 22, 9 through 14. So when they came to the place of which God had told them, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. He's fully convinced. Look at this. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes, looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. Look at God's faithfulness. So Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide, as it said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. You know what Abraham is proving here? When he went to go bound his son and about to kill him, fully convinced, he's proving that life is about worship, knowing God. Even if I lose people I love. Because that can happen. Right? The idol of people put before God in the past failed Abraham. When he decided to put his wife and what she thought first in front, it failed him. So Abraham lays his potential idol down, which is Isaac, on the altar to prove to God he loves them more than his idols. That's our life. That's why God calls us to do certain stuff, because he's like, look, do you love me more than that? Now, this is trivial. I'm embarrassed to talk about this in comparison to this, but I'm saying I remember when God was telling me to go ahead and quit my job going into ministry, and I remember I had my truck and my boat and all that kind of stuff, and God was like, sell it. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And that's not a big sacrifice, but to me at the time, I was like, I worked hard for this, right? But it was an idol. She said, can you give it up for me? Yeah, painfully. I traded in for a minivan and a Prius and no fishing for 3 years. But God wanted me to lay it down and say, am I better than that? And that's what God will be doing in your life. Whatever he's calling you to do, he's asking you, do you love me more than that? Right? Because Psalm 63:3 says, because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips praise you. He's saying, no one is better to me than God. No one. He's better than life. Many times we hold on to our idols because they haven't failed us yet. It would be better, though. This is what I'm saying. I'm not telling you to wait until your idol fails you. You know? But it'd be better. And I think God is, of course, preferring this, to declare God better than any potential idol. Like when you do baby dedications, it's telling God he's yours. That's what Hannah did about Samuel. He's yours. I waited all these years. I cried. I wasn't crying for me to get him and then turn my back on you. I cried to get him so I can give him to you. That's what he's saying here. Because true love, listen in verses 12 and 14. He saw the ram was caught in the thicket, right? But think of this. True love will always fight to give you what is best. This is what God is doing. God hates our idols because they are not enough. Think about this. When God is not your provider, think about how limited you are in the possibilities of being provided for. Think about if you only focus on what your spouse can do or what your kids can do or what that job can do. Immediate worry. Immediately. And because you're just seeing the provisions through that thing, worry, manipulation, lying, cheating, stealing, all that stuff comes from not trusting God to provide. See, Abraham never thought about it, but he never would have considered the provision of a ram caught in a bush. That's what God does. That's what faith does. It opens you beyond what you know. Abraham allowed God to bring about a provision he never would have considered. Trusting God expanded his faith to trust the possibilities of God providing in his own way. That's the whole point. God provides in his own way. It doesn't make sense to us many of times, but if it has to make sense to you, how will you ever change and get better and grow in God? He was poor in spirit. And poor in spirit considers what God can do. It doesn't look at itself like, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. I can answer this. I can answer that. Think about if Abraham never offered up Isaac because of being settled with being his own provider. Like, you know what? God provided this. Now I'm just settled to be my own provider. Think it. He never would have knew that God provides. That's what happens when you're afraid to step out on faith. You're not able to see that God provides when you do it. So if God never changes, same yesterday, today, forevermore, if you get a new situation that calls for God to answer it, the situation changes, but the same God who's able to do it does it. That's what he's saying. So you look back and say, yeah, I went through that, but I can go through this now because God is able. The thing would be Abraham, and this is crucial for us, if he didn't trust God, the sacrifice, Abraham will be stuck living with his own means of purpose, which is huge. Peace, joy, love, and worth. And God has a way of saving your life beyond your circumstances, right? Just showing you the world in a way you never thought you would have. Never thought. Philippians 4:19, and this is what the point of the promised seed, Jesus Christ. And Paul talks about this. He says, and my God, talking about people who are giving in the name of God and wanting to bless. And he's reassuring them that my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. And I'm asking you this. Are you regulating your provider to be the limitations of people, money and things or whatever? People can't give you, they give you momentary joy. Right? They can't give you purpose. I mean, with my kids, I try and teach them, look, God has a purpose for you. I don't know what it is. God has a purpose for you. I tell them, you know, because I want them to have that worth inside of them that God created you for a reason now. But I can't give it to them. God has to do that. So I'm asking you today, what is the Lord calling you to sacrifice in order to prove he is your provider? What is he calling you to sacrifice so you can see? And I'm not saying, and I know in this country we think money. I need more money so I can buy more stuff or pay all my bills or whatever. I'm saying purpose, which is greater than that. Joy, peace. What do you need him to provide for you that you're looking at other people and stuff for? Because God wants to be that. And that's why he sent his son. Let's pray.